Hello everyone, this is Jerry Pippin. According to many ancient writings and texts from around the world, there are creatures who can shift shape. Are they from another reality? It appears maybe so. One of the terms is djinns, fairies also from Ireland, the little people. But the djinns, they're not necessarily little people. Anne Druffel is our guest. She has written 6 books about the paranormal and UFOs. And we want to take time to welcome her to the show. And if you're interested in her books, we have all the links right here on our website, as well as andruffel.com, where you can find out more information about this lovely lady who has been at this for decades. She's on the phone from Los Angeles. Hello, Anne. How are you?
Thank you.
What's
new? The latest is that my book that was written in 1980 with a parapsychologist, D. Scott Rogo, The Tahunka Canyon Contacts, has been reprinted by Anomalous Press, Anomalous Books. And, you know, that was most surprising. They asked me if they could reprint it. And, of course, the first one was 1980, and then an updated one in 1989 with 2 new chapters, and now the 3rd edition.
Standing in God's Light, The End Times, that book's been out a little while now.
Yes, that was 2006.
And how has the reaction been for that book? We talked about that one time before.
Well, the reaction was not good, you see.
Why do you say that?
Because it's a combination. I wrote it with a very remarkable psychic, Armin Marcotte, you see. And it was such a combination of political and religious and clairvoyance that I think it dismayed some people who picked it up. And then other people would think that one chapter or one section was okay for them. I gave them information, and then they would get to the political section, or the one that was, you know, politically tinged, and throw it down. Things like that.
Why do you think they had such a reaction?
I don't know. It was based on 9 readings that Armin Marcotte gave me in the 1990s, before he died in 1999.
And those readings were for you personally, or for...
No, it was for the book. Uh-huh. He had this idea that came to him in the 1990s that we were approaching what he called end times, or, you know, the latter days.
Sure.
And he wanted us to write a book about it, because we had written 2 other books together, and they had been very successful.
And these 9 sessions that you had with him, what were some of the things that came out?
There were described what he felt would be going on during the so-called end times.
And what was that?
One of them was a flooding, and he described even before these huge floods started. You know,
You're talking about like
there
the like
all over the world.
Yeah, you're like talking about
that would kill many, many, many people, and even, you know, that we have never had before. And then he said there would be 2 kinds of floodings. There would be floodings of people from one country to another, and this would cause dissension among the nations. You see, where these immigrants, legal and illegal, were coming in. And so he said that that would be a sign of the end times, the latter days. And so, of course, both of those things have happened, both in Europe, you know, and in Canada and other countries, including our own.
And so, I mean, are we talking about 2012 here, Anne, or what are we talking about?
Well, he didn't mention 2012 because that was the Mayan prophecy, you see. And what his idea of the end times was that these would be disasters all over the world that would, you know, just political and physical disasters that would change the cultures of the nations of the countries around the world, and that they would not end. They would not end the world. You see, this was he's different in his opinion from a lot of people that think the world is going to be smashed by a comet or something like that. His idea was that these so-called end-time disasters would occur, but that there would be eventually a spiritual intervention, which he called it, that would bring about an end to the disasters and allow mankind to live in an evolved world peacefully. So,
you know, it's kind of amazing that people will get upset when somebody says, hey, we're going to have world peace.
maybe they didn't read that far, you see. But, you see, Armin died in 1999, and we had started the book in around 1997, and we had written four or five chapters, you see, four chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he died, I was able to write, the fourth and the fifth chapter from interviews we had, you know, that confirmed and the readings that he had given me. I mean, we were very close together writing the book. But then when he died, I had the other four chapters to write by myself. Just from what he had left, you see. So I set about researching very diligently the things that he had said. And I found that what he meant by a spiritual intervention to occur that would end the disasters of end times and bring about an evolved world in which we would live at peace might be what is called the Fatima prophecies, which took place in 1917.
I've done shows on Lady of Fatima. But what is your take on it? Was it
Fatima Center, which is both in Canada and the U.S. For many years, and it's my opinion that the Fatima prophecies and predictions in 1917, and then later on to one of the young visionaries. Are entirely correct, and that we should pay attention to them. And the one request that the Virgin Mary, who appeared to these three little shepherd children near Fatima, Portugal, her specific request was that the Pope consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, to her Immaculate Heart of Mary, and that this consecration would bring about a period of peace to the entire world, that Russia would be converted, she said. Not immediately, of course, but rather rapidly. And I just wondered if this is what Armin meant when he said in one of his, that the end times would end when the Pope consecrates Russia. And of course, this is a religious idea, and I suppose that some people who looked at the book decided they didn't want to read it because it was a religious idea, but it fit right in with Armand's prediction. He and I are both Catholics.
Yeah, I know that, and we've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. We've talked about a lot of things in the past. We've talked about a lot of things in the past. You've done a lot of research on gins.
Oh, yes.
Tell me exactly what we're talking about when we talk about gins.
Well, the jinn, J-I-N-N, is it's the Arabic word for an evil type of creature that is interdimensional, but whom the Muslims call the third order of creation. You know, they're an entire order of creatures, both good and bad, like humankind, but that the evil jinns are the ones who cause a lot of trouble. I was relating the idea of the Muslim jinn concept to the other kinds of interdimensional creatures which fit exactly the same kind of creature that the jinns are supposed to be. They're interdimensional. They live in a dimension different from our space-time continuum, but they live around and under our world. In other words, God created them as a second order of creation, and he gave them the earth in another dimension than we have it. And they appear to cultures all throughout the millennia under different names, according to the names that the culture, you know, the people in the cultures give them.
What are some of those names?
Well, like the Irish call them a fairy folk. The Native American Indians, all of the tribes have had contact with what they say are these kinds of harassing, victimizing creatures. All of them, but by different names.
I was talking to somebody here a while back, and I mentioned the fact of jinns, and I was thinking more of the little people in Ireland, but evidently jinns can be big creatures, too.
Well, you see, they're shape-shifting, and they can appear in any size, any shape, in any type of clothing, according to the culture in which they appear to the people, you see. But I wrote a book in 1998, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction.
Now, are jinns? Are they involved of alien abductions? I know you've done a lot on this Sahunga Pass thing too.
And the Sahunga Canyon contacts.
Yeah.
That was written even before we even had the concept of jinns in UFO research.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about abductions, so-called UFO alien abductions that were perpetrated upon six people, young women who lived in and near the Tahunga Canyon contacts, which are Tahunga Canyon canyons, which are northeast of Los Angeles, California.
Now, there's been a lot of people that think maybe alien abductions and this other interdimensional demons or creatures are connected. What do you think?
Well, yes, the book was inspired by a English researcher, Gordon Creighton, who has now died, but he was well known. He spoke Arabic. He knew Arabic friends, and he had been interested in the idea of alien abductions. But in his discussions with his Arabic friends, his Muslim friends, they told him about the concept of the jinns, which the Muslims call the third order of creation, but actually we are the third order, you see. We were created after the jinns according to this concept. So I got my idea first from Gordon Creighton. He was a very good friend of mine. And I researched it further for the book, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction, because three of the abductees that we had studied for years in Tahunga Canyon were able to fend off or to resist the creatures that were harassing them. You know, some of them actually hauled them aboard what seemed to them to be a spacecraft and a UFO.
When we talk about the way, and we talked about that book before when it first came out. In fact, remember one time in Roswell we did an interview about that. When we talk about these alien abductions, and especially your book, and we talked about it in Roswell at one time, if you remember.
Yes.
It seems to me that there's might be a religious element here. I mean, beseech you in the name of Jesus Christ, et cetera, et cetera, and they leave you alone.
Well, that's just one of the nine techniques that I had researched when I wrote the How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction. There were about three or four techniques that the Tahunga Canyon witnesses had used to fend off these creatures, which I came to think that they were possibly a shape-shifted form of the creatures that the Muslims call jinns, and the, you know, the Irish call fairies, and they're called boonians in Asia. That they had, this order of creation had tried to figure out for a long time how they could harass Americans, because we did not have long cultural concepts regarding this type of creature. And it was just my hypothesis that perhaps these creatures wanted to harass us too, but they couldn't do it in a cultural way that was done in Asia or in Europe or other countries. And so they shape-shifted into a form that Americans would be terrified of, they thought, technologically superior UFO aliens, you see.
So you're saying these jinns just like to harass us for why? I mean, why would they want to do that? Are they mischievous, or is it worse?
There's no good reason why they would harass us. I mean, this is not spoken of in the Muslim Quran, the reason why they harass us, and it's not spoken of in Ireland or any of the other countries where they are perceived, the reasons why it is done. But I speculate in my book, How to Defend Yourself Against Alien Abduction, that perhaps because if God created the world for them, you know, in another interdimensional sense, that when the human race was created, we took the space-time continuum dimension away, and maybe they resented us.
Have you talked to anybody who thinks they've seen jinns, or have you seen a jinn?
No, I've not seen a jinn.
Uh-huh.
I've only had one experience, which seems to me to be related possibly to the abduction scenarios, and that was I woke up early in the morning. It was still dark one night. I thought I had woken up, and I saw one of these hooded creatures that are described by some abductees, you know, as hauling them aboard spacecraft. I saw him standing by my bed. I don't know if it was a him or a her. And his face was shrouded with a cowl. But I was so terrified that I yelled out, "God help me." And instantly the creature vanished, and instantly at the same moment I came into full waking consciousness. And so I realized myself that what I had seen was perceived in an altered state of consciousness, not full waking consciousness, even though it seemed I was fully awake when I saw it standing by my bed.
It was had a hood on, somewhat like a monk or something?
Yes, but the entire face was, you know, was shrouded in shadow, and it, you know, had this long cloak on.
And did you said it said the face was covered with a towel? You mean like a Muslim head wrapping or what?
No. You see, you know, monks when they process, you know, in procession, they have their long cloaks and these cowls or hoods, the hoods that are part of the clothing, and they come over the face, and if you pull them down enough, the face is shadowed and you can't see it.
And their eyes, did they glow?
I did not see eyes. Uh-huh. I did not see any face at all.
How about these witnesses that you interviewed? Did they see any eyes in these creatures?
Yes. This is a strange thing. None of them saw the hooded creatures. They saw the ones who were abducted described their abductees as anything from about 5 to 6 feet tall to 3.5 feet tall. That they were different kinds of creatures that the different abductees saw.
But as you say, if you suspect they're jinns, then basically they can look whatever like you want them to look, right? I mean, they shift.
Yes, it's not that the person perceives them as shape-shifted, but according to the concept of jinns and others, they shape-shift themselves. They have this ability to shape-shift into different forms. And they also have the ability to appear physically very temporarily in our space-time, but then they have to go back to their own dimension. But we perceive them in their dimension because we perceive them in an altered state of consciousness.
Now, you said there were good ones and bad ones, right?
Pardon?
Good jinns and bad jinns, you said that?
Yes. The Muslim Quran describes them as good and bad. And other academics and historical writings describe them as good and bad. I mean, there are good and bad fairies, of course. Good and bad Boonians in Asia.
Mm-hmm. In the evidence that you've uncovered over the years on jinns, you said that some of them could appear physically for a short time. Do they look like? Are they humanoid then, or human looking?
No, they're in the shape that they have chosen to appear a different
uh-huh.
person.
So we really don't even know what they look like, huh?
I don't think we do. Hmm? No. There's some description in the Quran which says that there are different kinds of jinns, and that some are more more physical than others. Others are just smokeless flame. They call it. The bodies are made of smokeless.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, you're a Catholic. In Catholicism, is there anything equivalent to this?
Well, now, not in America, not in our country, but in Europe, the word demon is not synonymous with what we think of as devil. You see, we think that devils, in other words, fallen angels, and demons are the same type of creature, that demons are fallen angels. But in Europe, which, they're much older cultures than we are, they have determined that demons are synonymous with jinns.
How do you feel personally about demons and angels and fallen angels? Do you think, for instance, do we have guardian angels?
Oh, yes. Yes. I believe that everyone has a guardian angel. Some people think they have two, but from what I've researched, each person born on the earth is given one guardian angel. But the thing is, the guardian angel cannot help a person with problems that they might have unless they are appealed to, unless they are recognized as being with you.
Hmm.
And then they can help you.
Okay, now you got a re-release on this book. Are you writing something these days, or are you just taking it easy?
Oh, I never take it easy. I'm afraid. No, I'm writing two articles. Paranormal events that have happened, and I'm looking forward to writing my memoirs, my research memoirs, because I have been encouraged by certain colleagues to write my memoirs, not only the UFO research but also the paranormal research, and I've been wanting to write a personal memoirs, of course, about my family.
Well, maybe you can combine it all.
Combine some of it, yes.
Yeah, it sounds like that would be a good project. Your articles on these paranormal events, what are they about? I don't want you to give it all away, but
well, one of them was a neighbor kid. I mean, she was about 10, and one night I saw her leaping through my living room in an out-of-body state. You see what I mean? I was checking up on my children. We had five daughters. I was checking up on one of my daughters just to be sure she was okay before I went to bed, and I heard her say, "Go home, Allison. Mama's coming." Because I wouldn't let their friends in the house because I was so busy during the day with my work that they had to play outside. But apparently, so I went I wondered about it. I went up to Carolyn, my daughter, and she was sound asleep. Then I turned back, and in the living room, I saw this figure bound through my living room, up through the window, toward Allison's house. And this, to me, was so startling that I just had to write an article about it.
Do you think it was all of us have a persona other than inside our body that we're out visiting other people or whatever?
Well, it's called out-of-body experience. Uh-huh. Yes, I believe that all of us do have what's called the astral spirit.
In other words, we can...
Which can depart from the physical body when you're asleep.
And go wherever, huh?
Go wherever, yes. Some people do it a lot. Some people know that they can do it.
Oh, that explains to me why I'm so tired after a good night's sleep sometimes.
Yes. I only had one out-of-body experience in my life. I think that's what it was anyway.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, I'm doing a research project in Ireland since 1979, and I'm looking for the grave of Robert Emmett, known as the Darling of Ireland, and he had started a rebellion against the English in 1803 to free Ireland mm-hmm. from England at that time, and the English caught him and chopped off his head. But before he died, he said, "Let no man write my epitaph. Let my name, my grave remain unknown and uninscribed until Ireland takes her place among the nations of the earth." And then in 1830, teams of Ireland, Irish and Irish Americans, started to try to find Emmett's grave because they thought that it would lead to a final peace in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
A nation undivided, like it used to be, before the English moved in. Since recently, I've come to realize that Robert Emmett probably did not mean that if his grave is found, peace would come to Ireland. That peace would have to come to Ireland. The North would have to be joined to the South in some way before his grave was located, you see.
Have you got a lead on where it might be?
Yes, I have, finally.
Good.
And next year I'm going for what I hope is a final research trip. I've been there 10 times on this project. And hopefully we could find the position of part of his remains. It seems like perhaps the bones were divided into three parts and buried in different parts of Ireland.
Wow.
So that's very exciting.
Like I said earlier, I know there's some things happening in Ann Drubble's life, and by golly, there are.
Yes, it's a very exciting
life. We've only got about a minute or two left. What is your feeling about the paranormal and UFOs combined? Are they really related, or are we just kind of mixing them up, or what? I mean, like the abductions, there's some evidence that these abductions may not be what we think they are. You already alluded to that. Maybe gins.
If a certain amount of abductees can fend off or resist or tell these creatures just to go away, and wake up from the altered state in which they're perceiving them, that means that they are not purely physical. And my own impression, my own hypothesis is that they are posing as technologically superior aliens. They are being recognized by a lot of researchers as purely physical aliens who are actually kidnapping and victimizing and sexually harassing human beings. But because the order of creatures called jinns do sexually harass human beings, and so do some fairies too, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. That would mean...
So in other words, these gins could actually harm you somewhat.
I think they can harm you by stressing you out.
Mm-hmm.
If you're so afraid of them that you just go crazy every time they come and don't know what to do about it and just come to accept that this harassment will go on for the rest of your life, you see. According to the Quran, the jinns are not permitted by their creator, by God, to actually harm or kill human beings directly.
In Christian or Catholic religion, do we have anything comparable?
In the Catholic religion?
Yeah, right, about jinns.
Well, demons. Demons are mm-hmm. perceived to be a form of what the Muslims call jinns. And what other cultures call by different names.
And Anne, I wish we had more time to talk a little bit more. You have the two books out. Is the book that you wrote back in 1998 about the alien abductions and how to deal with them, is that still available?
Oh, yes. That's available from a Random House on a POD basis, print on demand.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my six books are available through my website, which is www.andruffel.com, and three or four of them are available on Amazon.com.
Anne Druffel, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for being on.
Well, thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it.
I have too.
Okay, bye-bye.